Good afternoon. This is Chair Ruth Richardson, and pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the Education Policy Committee to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Chair Richardson?
Present.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson, present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Berg?
Berg, present.
Representative Bowe?
Bowe, present.
Representative Christensen?
Present.
Representative Druskowski?
Present.
Representative Edelson?
Present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Frazier?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Keeler?
Present.
Representative Moeller?
Present.
Representative Mueller? Representative Mueller? Representative Poston?
Present.
Representative Scott? Representative Scott? Representative Erdahl?
Present.
Representative Wasilewicz? Wasilewicz excused. Representative Mueller. Representative Erdahl.
Present.
Sorry, I just didn't catch that the first time. Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you. Up next on the agenda, we have the approval of the minutes from February 14th, 2022. Representative Erickson, have you had an opportunity to review those minutes?
Madam Chair, I move approval of the minutes from February 14th.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Members, I'll ask you to unmute as this is a voice vote. All in favor of the Erickson motion to approve the minutes from February 14th, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Next on the agenda is House File 1083, Representative Moeller's bill related to comprehensive school mental health services. And Rep. Moeller, would you like to move House File 1083 to be referred to the Committee on Education Finance?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Moeller. Would you also like to move the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that you would like?
Yes, Chair Richardson, I would like to move the DE1 amendment.
Members, another voice vote coming up. All in favor of adopting the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Members, we will have a time certain vote on this bill at 1:45 p.m. And we'll also ask members to hold their questions until we get through all of the testimony as well. Representative Moeller, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. So members, House File 1083 is a bill that you've heard the past couple of years. It creates a lead position at MDE to assist school districts in developing an evidence-based response to student mental health. This year with the DE amendment that we just adopted, we're also creating a lead position to address teacher and staff mental health. When I started working on this bill in 2018, student mental health was already in a state of crisis. Even before the pandemic, every educator I talked to said students were experiencing growing mental health needs and that those needs were not being met. Students have also been telling us this is a problem. In 2019, suicide was the second leading cause of death for young people, and the 2019 student survey indicated a growing number of students who felt depressed and anxious, and this was before the pandemic. You will hear testimony today about the pandemic and other factors, how they have exacerbated the mental health needs of students. In addition, you will also hear about the growing and urgent need to assist our teachers and staff with their mental health needs. When they are working with students who have experienced trauma, it impacts them. A teacher told me once about a student cutting herself in class. The student was sent to the nurse, bandaged up, and returned right away to the classroom. That experience speaks to the need for mental health supports for students and teachers and staff. Essentially, these two positions at MDE will create a clearinghouse for districts, teachers, staff, students, and their families on mental health. It doesn't require the districts to do anything, but rather these leads will gather and share evidence-based strategies with districts to address the mental health needs of students, teachers, and staff. This bill has had bipartisan support in the past, and I want to thank MDE for their support and assistance. You'll also see letters of support in your packet from NAMI, Ed Allies, Minnesota School Social Workers Association, Mental Health Minnesota, the Suburban Ramsey Family Collaborative, and the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Education Minnesota also supports this bill. And with that, Chair Richardson, I'd like to move to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. I will just note for the upcoming testifiers that our committee administrator, Sydney Spreck, will be keeping time. And so she will have notifications that pop up in the chat function to ensure that we stay on schedule. First up, we have Amy Jones, who is an educational consultant. And on deck, we have Al Levin. Amy Jones, please unmute yourself, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Amy Jones. I'm a self-employed educational consultant working to improve mental health for students and school staff in Minnesota. I'm a 30-year licensed classroom teacher and have worked in education at all levels, including as an elected school board member in the Mountview District, an administrator in Minneapolis and Stillwater, an instructional coach, a classroom teacher, and adjunct professor at the university level. I'm a governor-appointed member of the Minnesota State Advisory Council on Mental Health and the Mental Health in Schools Work Group. I'm also a certified mental health first aid facilitator for youth and adults. I've been working with Representative Mueller for the last 4 years to add a position for a comprehensive mental health lead at MDE. We are one of a very few states that doesn't have such a position. We need it now more than ever. During our recent discussions with stakeholders, state agencies, and education organizations, everyone agreed that we also needed to add a lead position to support and coordinate improved mental health for staff and teachers as well. Minnesota is behind most states in having state-level leads for mental health in schools. Representative Mueller and I have been working to provide more mental health support in Minnesota schools after seeing a growing and timely need. House File 1083 would put Minnesota in line with other states that have a mental health in schools lead in the Department of Education. This position would not be tied to overseeing a grant. Rather, it would provide a much needed contact person to address the many challenges and opportunities currently facing our students' mental health. We've updated the bill to add a position for a mental health lead for staff and teachers. This would be a non-grant funded position at the Department of Ed to support teacher staff and teacher mental health. More than ever, we see our school staff and teachers struggling with their own mental health and in the challenge to support the mental health of their students. In the midst of the third school year of the pandemic, we have many qualified, passionate, exceptional staff and teachers leaving the profession. Not only is this a workforce crisis, but the stability of our educational system will be greatly impacted if we continue to hemorrhage these talented and dedicated staff and teachers. Our state deserves positions to oversee and coordinate this work so that both our students and teachers and staff have the support they need to stay in our schools to be effective and successful. These crucial positions are long overdue, and if the pandemic has shown us anything, it has illuminated this glaring and growing need to improve mental health in our schools. Our students, school staff, and teachers deserve the support. I thank you for your time and hope for your support of House File 1083.
Thank you, Ms. Jones, for your testimony. Up next, we have Al Levin, Assistant Principal with St. Paul Public Schools, and Sarah Washington on deck. Al Levin, please unmute yourself, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for letting me testify today. My name is Al Levin, and I'm an assistant principal in St. Paul Public Schools. I've been in the district since February of 1999, and I've been in an administrative role for approximately 15 years. I am a governor-appointed member of the Minnesota State Advisory Council on Mental Health, and I serve on the State Suicide Prevention Task Force. I've been advocating for better systems of supports for our educators since well before the current pandemic. Many of our students are going in and out of complex trauma on a daily basis. These traumas often manifest through the students' behaviors throughout the school day, and they have implications and consequences on the mental health of our staff. These challenges have only been exacerbated by the current pandemic. Dealing with the behaviors and supporting our students through their challenging situations oftentimes creates trauma, known as vicarious trauma, secondary trauma, or compassion trauma for our educators. While tending to the mental health needs and the challenges of the classrooms, many of our educators are now more and more are many of our educators now have more and more of their own trauma due to the pandemic. We have educators who are dealing with their own health issues or those of a loved one due to the pandemic. We have a teacher shortage, a substitute shortage, and a paraprofessional shortage. Our teachers are pulled to substitute in other classrooms during their prep times, leaving no time throughout the day to prepare for their lessons or to grade work, let alone time to process some of the traumatic situations that occur in their classrooms. It is not unusual to have an educator in my office in tears, wondering if they'll be able to finish the week or even the day without more support for their students or for their own mental health. I know of educators who have walked out during the school day due to their stress. I know of educators who have had to deal with a suicidal student and after calling for support are asked to continue with their lesson. No processing, no additional support. The situation is dire. Many seasoned educators are stating that these past couple of years have been the most challenging of their career. Educators are leaving the profession at an alarming rate. Last November, Education Minnesota stated that the teachers' union can't remember a time when so many educators left their jobs during the year, and we're not even into December yet. A non-grant funded position at MDE would focus on the mental health of our educators is imperative to public education. While there's a great deal of talk and work towards supporting our students, it is time that we focus on the mental health of our educators as well. I urge you to support this bill. Public education is relying on it.
Thank you, Mr. Levin. Next up, we have Sarah Washington, who is a parent advocate with Minneapolis Public Schools. Please unmute yourself and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Ms. Sarah Washington. I'm a mother of four and a grandmother of five and a consumer of school-based mental health. Now is the time to step up and ensure that our students and teachers' mental health is supported. Just as we have policies and programs designed to nurture children's physical health, we must also support children's social and emotional development. Research supports the importance of mental health services in schools. Schools help shape children's and adolescents' development. Children spend more than half of their waking hours in schools. Data indicates that students are substantially more likely to seek mental health support when school-based services are available. School-based services may help reduce the stigma in seeking help for mental health concerns, one of the primary reasons that individuals and families do not seek support. Early screening, identification, and intervention to address mental health issues prevent long-term negative impact on the child's learning, relationship, and health. Now let's talk about our teachers. You have all heard the phrase, when you are flying on a plane, to put your oxygen mask on first. If teachers and staff are not healthy, they cannot help the kids. We are at an all-time high of losing staff because they are burnt out and not being able to get help and support for mental wellness. The struggle bus of this pandemic has increased this need more than ever. Beyond the pandemic, there are many stressors that are happening in the world today: racism, gun violence, trauma on trauma. With the huge surplus, it is time to put that money in districts, children's, families, and communities. We have a chance to amend the bill, update it, and try again. I'm endorsing and in full support of adding a permanent non-grant position at MDE to support students, teachers, staff, mental health at the state level. We need someone in this position to coordinate, collaborate with other agencies, and to help schools so they can better help students. Minnesota can lead the way in creating two lead positions, one to coordinate mental health for students and one to coordinate and lead mental health work for staff and teachers. Please join me in supporting this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Washington, for joining us today, and also thank you for your testimony as well. Up next, we have Carrie D'Averill, and on deck, we have Kristen Daniels. Ms. D'Averill, if you would unmute yourself, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Of course. Hello, Chair Richardson, Representative Mueller, and everyone else on this call. My name is Kari D'Averill.
I'm the licensed schools nurse at South Education Center. It's part of Intermediate District 287. I wrote this yesterday. It said, I'm not burned out. I haven't given up on kids. From every fiber of my being, every pulse in my heart, I want to do what's right in a system that's so wrong and broken. Schools are treated as businesses when we're trying to provide nurturing, warm, and healing care so that kids can be educated and learn, feel safe, and grow. Schools right now are not academic centers focused on algebra, Socrates, or the scientific inquiry. Sure, teachers want to dig in. They want to encourage thought and growth. Kids' desire to learn is still present. But how do you learn if life is full of fear and loss? Neurologically, the ability to learn must be built on society's ability to surround a child with a world that meets their basic needs, ensuring them a village of adults to keep them safe. And adults, we failed them. Representatives, we failed them. There's family evictions, deportation sweeps, racial justice protests, and funerals for friends dying so young, teddy bears rest in the caskets of young lives gone too soon. The kids are not safe. Some curl up, some fight back, some are dying. Kids are not okay. COVID school closures, family loss of income, illness, death, one more parent lost, grandma couldn't recover, therapy closed, county supports online, only a face on a screen to give support. The village of adults is fractured. We are not okay. 2 weeks ago, Jamari Rice died under my hands in a snowbank. He was just feet from our school door. It was lunchtime. The two shooters were also my kids. They were young men with promise. I know them. They have shy grins. They have a love of soccer. They cried in my office over the years from physical pain, emotional hurt that we have done to them. All five of the young men involved that day were just hurting kids. In my office at South Education Center, I not only take care of the kids, but I'm the place where the staff come to cry. They rock in my chair, they drink tea, they swear, and they cry. For 6 years, I patched them up so that they can go out and fight. I work with rock stars. These are staff that do conga lines, so that a child doesn't throw a chair at their head. They call kids every morning. They know them all. They know which ones need a hug and which ones need a loving kick in the pants. But this year, I see the loss of hope. Teachers are done. One of them looked me in the eye just yesterday and said, Jamari's death should affect me more. But to be honest, it's just one more thing. The kids aren't okay. The adults hate themselves that we're failing. We're walking away because one day we all wake up and find there is nothing left of our true selves. Who's going to take our place? Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony and thank you for coming to the committee today as well. Up next, we have Kristen Daniels, and on deck we have Matthew Coy. Kristen Daniels, if you could unmute yourself, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kristen Daniels, and I am a licensed Minnesota educator and the founder and CEO of Catapult Ed, a professional support and software services company dedicated to elevating the voices of education stakeholders. For the past 5 years, I have been using corporate idea management software in my work with K-12 principals and superintendents. This ideation software provides an online space for stakeholders to crowdsource ideas and solutions to the questions posed by their school or district leaders. In this work, I have facilitated over 120 crowdsourcing initiatives, generating close to 5,000 ideas from over 10,000 students, staff, families, and community members. To me, this is critical work to ensure the priorities of stakeholders, especially those of students and staff, are heard. In every initiative that I have facilitated, I have seen ideas that address the mental health needs of both students and staff. This shows up in a variety of ways, depending on the focus of the initiative. The reason I'm here today is to advocate for House File 1083 based on what I have seen through my work. In the following examples, mental health was noted as the primary concern and reason for the proposed idea or solution. This is a summary of common themes, ideas, and solutions posed by those who either witness or experience pain points related to mental health in schools. I am neither advocating for these ideas, nor am I indicating that these are the proper solutions. I am simply sharing this summary to show that mental health issues are consistently surfaced by students and staff, and many are waiting for solutions. These are ideas that address the student experience: more recess for young students, reduced homework loads, more asynchronous time in schools, and ideas that address the support and resources found in the schools include mental health therapists in the schools, self-care opportunities for staff and students, mental health resources for schools, creating calm and safe spaces during the day, updated curriculum on mental health issues, support groups for students, mental health awareness, excused absences for mental health professionals in schools. The last idea was a top idea prioritized during a community crowdsourcing event. Until we address the mental health crisis in schools with intention and collaboration, the problem will continue to exist and students and staff will continue to seek solutions. We cannot solve this problem in isolated pockets. I am in support of House File 1083. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Matthew Coy, and we have Katie Peagle on deck. Matthew Coy, if you could unmute yourself, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Matthew Coy. I'm a lifelong resident of Southeast Minnesota, a business owner, a volunteer firefighter, an EMT, an engaged parent, a mental health advocate.
Mr. Coy?
And most importantly, I'm a dad to Wyatt and Morgan.
Mr. Coy, I'm sorry.
My son Wyatt lost his battle with.
Mr. Coy, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but your audio is a little garbled. Maybe try turning your camera off to see if that improves your bandwidth, and then if you could proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, is this an improvement?
That is a vast improvement. Thank you.
Is there any improvement there at all?
There is, yes.
Very good. Thank you for that. Again, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Matthew Coy. I'm a lifelong resident of Southeast Minnesota, a business owner, a volunteer firefighter and EMT, an engaged parent, a mental health advocate, and most importantly, a dad to Wyatt and Morgan. My son Wyatt lost his battle with depression in January of 2017 when he took his own life. He was only 18. In my view, we can affect some real change by increasing our efforts surrounding mental health in a manner that is preventative, as well as responding to mental health crises as they occur. In addition to home and individual efforts, I believe we can reach a great number of our youth where they live, which is at school. House File 1083 helps to serve this purpose. Establishing a presence at the state level will help provide young people with tools and resources early on before crisis events materialize. But HF 1083 will also help to support the existing local efforts by educators, staffers, and administrators. Currently, many educators and staffers are simply doing their best without any real structure or formal support, which of course limits the effectiveness of their efforts. Equally important is supporting the mental health of our educators, administrators, and staffers themselves. Since my son's death, I've had the opportunity to attend and lead workshops and roundtable discussions with many of these people. And one common theme from these interactions is a concern over their own mental health. I hear things like, "I have no idea what I'm doing," or, I want to help, but I'm so afraid that if something goes wrong, I'll blame myself. And most common, I hear things like, I want to help, but how can I when I don't even know how to help myself? A common theme in emergency medicine is that a dead EMT can't help anybody. That's true with mental health as well. We need to make sure that our frontline responders, including those who are based in the school setting, are able to effectively care for their own well-being, so they are then in turn able to effectively care and support the well-being of others. To that end, I am asking for your vote in support of House File 1083. I appreciate your time and consideration today and appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you, Mr. Coy, for your testimony and our condolences to you and your family and the loss of Wyatt. Up next, we have our final testifier on behalf of the author, Katie Peagle, principal and residence with the University of Minnesota. If you could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Katie Pakel, and I am the principal residence at the University of Minnesota and the lead researcher on 5 statewide surveys in the last 2 years. I've been asked to come today to lend the numbers to the voices that you've just been hearing today in this testimony. At the very beginning of the pandemic, we initially led a survey of just educators called the Distance Learning Survey. We chose to partner then with the Minnesota Department of Education to broaden that scope to begin to look at the voices of not just educators, but also families and students. We did 3 surveys of families and students beginning in the winter or February of 2021. We did a follow-up survey again in the spring of 2021, and then a final survey, which happened just this fall. This is the overall numbers of folks who responded to the survey. I'm here today to share with you the voices and thoughts of over 53,000 individual respondents across those 3 survey distributions. Here is our key finding from that survey, which will come as no surprise to you, but that there is, of course, a definite need for support in mental health. We know that there's widespread consensus across all respondent groups, and we know that it is a significant concern. Not only is it a concern, but it is a growing concern across all 3 survey distributions. When we ask them what has been a concern for them, mental health rated number 1 from administrators, teachers, and support professionals for themselves and others across all 3 distributions. It rated in the top 5 for students and families. However, what I want to draw your attention to is the concern grew over time. So for example, if you look at teachers, this idea of their concern about taking care of their own mental health, while it was the number 1 factor across all 3 iterations, we went from 50% of teachers saying it was the number 1 factor to 71% of teachers saying it was the number 1 factor. So being the number 1 concern is one thing, but the fact that it's a growing concern is one entirely other. So what do they need? What do they want in terms of mental health support? Families tell us they want prevention and intervention around bullying and harassment. Students tell us that they want prevention and intervention around self-harm and suicide, and they'd like more positive student-teacher relationships. Educators tell us that they need more support for students as well as themselves, and they need there to be more opportunities for students to build relationships with peers. We also know that they'd like to see changes in the actual learning environments across all 3 iterations of the survey. They told us that they needed increased supports to improve the teaching and learning environment and to support staff and students with their mental health. Specifically, they wanted more manageable workloads for staff. They needed help with engaging, disengaged students. They wanted clearer communications, and students wanted more doable lessons and assignments. The second piece of data that I'm going to share with you today came from a statewide survey of school principals. We surveyed every principal, assistant principal, and charter school leader in Minnesota between November and December of this year. We had a 34% response rate of the 779 people who responded to the survey. They told us that the area that they need the most professional development in right now is reducing the burnout of staff. When we asked them specifically about COVID-19 and what is the most ongoing challenge that they are facing related to COVID-19, they told us, of course, student engagement is a concern, loss of instruction, and active pushback from families related to COVID mitigation strategies. But they also told us in no uncertain circumstances that student mental health and staff mental health are their most pressing and ongoing concerns as school principals. When asked what they needed to support themselves and their schools at this stage of the pandemic, 1 in 10 principals told us they need supports and resources for themselves. They also told us overwhelmingly that they need mental health resources for students and for staff. A voice from the field has us hearing this. Mental health has been a major barrier pre-pandemic and has increased in volume and scope. Our resources and support from the county level and state level in the same time period have decreased, which has left us as administrators doing dual duty, managing mental health cases with little to no support from professionals in the area. Anything that can be done to support students' mental health would be a significant victory for education. I'm going to stop there and lend my support to House File 1083.
Thank you, Ms. Patel, for your testimony. Before we move to public testimony, I will just note that we have representatives here from the Department of Education standing by for questions as well, Heather Hirsch and Shayna Morse. We have one individual who signed up for public testimony today, Jolie Holland with the School Nurse Organization of Minnesota. Please unmute yourself, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Jolie Holland. I'm the legislative chair for SNOM, the School Nurse Organization of Minnesota. I'm a second generation licensed school nurse in a rural area, and I cover 16 schools and programs in 11 different locations. We support HF 1083 to provide mental health specialists at the MDE. The scope of the practice for a school nurse includes mental health, but most who work in mental health in schools other than LSNs don't include the medical and physical health issues, such as assessing for medication side effects or students who have ingested harmful pills, etc. This position at the MDE would be a valuable resource for LSNs for part of the job that they do. Mental health is health, and sometimes we forget about that. Therefore, we feel these positions are important, but we don't want to diminish the critical need to permanently fund the licensed school nurse at the MDE, which is a current bill offered by Representative Morrison. Our licensed school nurses live firsthand the problems of mental health for our students and staff. Students show up in our health offices with concerns, including anxiety, depression, fatigue, and other physical problems, but they might not recognize that as mental health. Sorry, I'm getting choked up. School nurses are frequently the first to identify and address behavioral health concerns and connect students and their families to support systems. One study indicated that school nurses spend 32% of their time providing mental health services. We help students that are crying uncontrollably, severely depressed, anxious, self-harm issues, suicidal ideation, and we continue to support them. There were two students recently in a Minnesota school who took pills, and one cut themselves as well. The appropriate medical attention was given by their LSN, one with outpatient support, and one ended up on a ventilator but is now back in school. We also support staff who are having mental health issues. It's estimated that a third to two-thirds of schools don't have their own school nurse on site, and the state doesn't have exact data. A school nurse is the bridge between health and education in the school setting. The bottom line, we help kids stay in school, and we feel this position at the MDE would be a valuable resource for us all. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony today. We'll now move into member questions, and we'll start with Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you everyone for your testimony. And thank you, Mrs. Bickel, for sharing that survey with us. You know, I recall in 2017 when a former Representative Jennifer Loon added to the school-linked mental health grants. Now, that was 2017, so something had to begin back then. I'm not sure who has followed that. HHS does carry that money, but, you know, that began, and I'm not sure what has happened along the way, whether we have reports from MDE to support that. But I am really surprised that MDE did not step up to the plate during the pandemic to ensure that they take out of their general fund dollars to make sure they had leaders in mental health for both students and staff. I consider that a travesty because MDE frequently takes money from their funds to support different programs, and certainly it was needed then. So I hope that Mr. Ooney is listening in on this and can share some of that with us. So I really don't have a question other than that to Mr. Ooney, but I do have this comment. In some of my schools in East Central Minnesota, during the lunch hour, school clergy, especially youth clergy, come into the school and they relate with the students during lunchtime. This is at both the middle school and high school levels. And so I want to make this statement. I hope that schools are also turning to their clergy, whether they are Christian, Jewish, Islamic, or any other, because students can relate to messages that come from these young men and women who are circulating among our students, to give them some hope through spiritual messages. And students sometimes come to us without foundations in this manner, and they need that time to learn more about what is available to them through that spiritual help. So, you know, I hope that schools are not ignoring that. I know I talked about this several years ago when I was policy chair and, you know, asked that same question. Do schools have that happening? And I know in Princeton, where my home is and where I used to teach, we had the presence of these young men and women with our young people during lunchtime. And, you know, it really made a difference. And they learned to turn to them as well as to the school nurse and to others, counselors, et cetera, for their help when they had these issues. So, you know, I hope that's not gone away and that's still available in our schools. But if Adosh Ooney is present, I want to know what MDE has been doing to help with our schools, our students and our staff during the pandemic, when especially we know mental health issues have increased. So I'll wait to hear from him if he's listening in. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Before we determine if Mr. Ooney is here, Representative Moeller, do you have anything to in response to the questions?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erickson, for bringing that example in your school. And I think that this position is the kind of position, this lead position, that's going to be looking at what different districts are doing that's effective, and that could be one of those things that they learn about and then can share that information with other school districts. So, you know, you gave a good example, and I know schools across the state are doing a lot of really good work in this area, but it's not very coordinated. And so having that lead position to help coordinate all of that would be really helpful. So thanks again for your comment.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. I am not seeing Mr. Ooney, so Representative Mueller.
I'm happy to chime in a little bit here with what I can.
There's someone.
Oh, there you go. Thank you, Ms. Morris.
Yes, for the record, Shana Morris, Assistant Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education. And so Chair and Representative Erickson, to sort of respond to your question at a high level, over the course of the number of years in the past, the department has certainly had an emphasis in mental health, made several investments where we can, specifically with school-linked mental health grants that are run through DHS. There were some discretionary ARP funds that were put towards that this past summer. And so I think we're happy to kind of talk more about some of the work that we're doing, as you've heard today, as you've seen in the governor's budget proposals and policy proposals. There's just so much more to do in this space. my colleague Heather Hirsch is here if you wanted to get into kind of any of the specific pieces that we are working on now and how those are funded, because several of them are non-permanent funds. They're coming from federal grants.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Morris, for that information. Perhaps at some later time, we could have the department present that full scope of what's done in mental health from the school-linked mental health grants to now the positions that we are looking at today, these lead positions, and then, you know, what else has occurred, because they must know something. And I'm sure Ms. Pickell probably knows even more than that I'm even thinking about here in regard to what's been going on in our schools. But it's important that we as policymakers know that, so we know how to proceed and how to encourage the department to really try to figure out a way to work with our school districts, our charters, to help our students, because many are not grounded in any foundational beliefs, and they need that special guidance. And what better time to do it than now when we see this urgency? So MDE, I hope that we can count on you, because this is just so essential to our schools and our charters.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. We have a couple of hands up and not a lot of time. So we will start with Representative Mueller, just noting that we are coming up on time here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be very quick. As an educator for almost 20 years myself, I understand how, and who also taught during the pandemic, I understand and can certainly sympathize with how incredibly impactful this has been. I too have sat in my classroom and cried. I too have been with my students as they have cried as well. I know I have been there and experienced these emotions and these impacts that we've had. My question is this, and I'm not quite sure who can answer it, but I'm just gonna ask, how is the main goal, and what we've heard over and over again, is we need supports for mental health. We need to be able to provide more interventions and more preventative measures for our students and our staff in mental health. How is employing two administrative positions in MDE going to get money to our schools where they actually have contact with students? And again, we have to provide resources for our local school districts, but I don't understand how two administrative positions at MDE in a big bureaucratic setting is going to give our local school districts the funding that they need to actually address this issue. And so I thank you that we're bringing attention to this, and whoever can answer that would be great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. And we'll start with the author of the bill, Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Mueller, for that question. And I'll say this is just one piece of the puzzle. This isn't the only piece, but I would like to turn it over to my testifier, Ms. Jones, who I think could answer that question.
Ms. Jones.
Thank you so much, Chair Richardson. I completely agree with you. We need more resources in our schools. One of the things that I hear in my work a lot is that it's hard to know who to contact at MDE as kind of the point contact starting person. There's a lot of work that's happening in schools, in individual districts, and at MDE. There's a lot of different people working on mental health. What's not happening is any level of coordination and oversight and pulling it all together so that there can be a clearinghouse, a contact person that puts you in contact with appropriate resources or helps you know about things that are working really well in other sites that you might not hear about. So the opportunity to scale up promising practices, the opportunity to hear about trainings that are being effective, resources that are being developed, to get questions addressed, and to connect all of the agencies and all of the different people that are working really hard on mental health. There isn't anyone that's pulling that together. And I completely agree with you 100% that we need more resources in schools. One of the things that I think would be very helpful about having someone that is kind of leading this work is that they could help advocate for the promising practices they're seeing already, and also pulling together all of the information from
from our sites across our state about what's working and what's not, staffing, resources, training, what people are really kind of sharing about what's working and what's not. There's a lot of amazing little pockets out there, but there isn't a way to pull that all together. Other states have people that help to pull that all together at their Department of Education. And we are advocating that we should also be joining that group to have someone that is doing the coordination and oversight. I agree with you. We also need that money in the buildings. I think that that is something that I would also 100% support, and I hope that we move forward on. This particular bill brings positions together that would do that coordination, oversight, clearinghouse, to start the who do you call first? Where do I find the latest information? How do we connect people? How do we scale up things that are actually working? This would be the point person for that at MDE.
Thank you, Ms. Jones. And I will also just note that I had a really interesting conversation with the Future Farmers of America this week, and they were talking about this model being used within the Ag Department as well. There's two positions within the Ag Department related to mental health, and so there are probably some opportunities for some lessons learned there as well in terms of looking at that. Thank you, Representative Mueller, for your question. We're going to give the final question to Representative Hassan.
Oh, I can unmute myself. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep. Mueller, for this bill. As someone who has worked in the mental health field prior to the pandemic, all of the, you know, testimonies and the stories people were telling resonate with me, because I know that we were struggling in mental health and resources for mental health prior to the pandemic. And now the pandemic has been going on 3 years. I can only, you know, imagine what this educators and these students are struggling with. And I don't know if folks know, but, you know, mental health is much more common than most people think. But I also want to add and stress on the other challenge that our students are facing. Constant racism, violence, and microaggressions also contribute to the well-being of our students and their mental health well-being. So I would urge that, you know, we support this bill and really think that it's critical that we have a position that, you know, gets all of this data, because there's constant data that you know is getting updated all the time. What are the latest, you know, methods? What are people using? What is new? So I think this is a really good idea. Our educators need support. Our students need support. Our PIPAC students need support. So I thank you, and I hope that we can provide tremendous support for our students and educators. Thank you, Rep. Mueller.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. Rep. Mueller, last words.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just want to thank my testifiers again for being here today and sharing their stories. And when I talk about this subject, I always want to make sure that I provide people with information for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. It's 1-800-273-8255, or you can text MN to 741-741. With that, Madam Chair and members, thank you so much. I hope to have your support on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Representative Mueller renews the motion to refer House File 1083 as amended to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll. Richardson votes aye.
Aye for Richardson. Vice Chair Hassan.
Hassan votes aye.
Representative Erickson.
Erickson abstains until I know more about what MDE is really going to do.
Representative Bennett.
No.
Representative Berg?
Berg, yes.
Representative Bowe? Representative Bowe? Representative Christensen?
Yes.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Edelson?
Yes.
Representative Feist?
Yes.
Representative Frazier?
Yes.
Representative Jordan?
Jordan, aye.
Representative Keeler?
Keeler, aye.
Representative Mueller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
Abstain until I hear more about the fiscal note.
Representative Poston?
Poston, aye.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
As someone who has taught and had students commit suicide while I was teaching, yes.
Representative Wasliwick?
Yes.
Representative Bowe?
Bowe votes no.
Madam Chair, there are 13 ayes, 4 nays, and 2 abstains.
With 14 ayes, 3 nays, and 2 abstentions, the motion prevails and the bill as amended is referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Up next on the agenda, we are moving on to testimony, an informational hearing on school violence. And I just want to make a note for the record that this is an ongoing conversation and that we are going to continue to have conversations and bills coming through the committee really related to addressing this issue. Before we get started, I also want to take this moment to thank Representative Poston for his work around this area and his introducing me to the Ripple program. We'll be having more information coming up on that in a future hearing. We all heard the horrific details of what happened at District 287. There's no words to describe losing a child, and we send our condolences to the family of Jumeirah Rice. And our thoughts, our prayers, our support also go out to all of the other students, the school staff, and the families who have been impacted, whether that's physically, whether that's emotional injury, whether it's related to the trauma on trauma, as one of the testifiers talked about earlier today. Because we know that this is a serious traumatic event, and that pain associated with that lingers, and it has a real impact of not only physically, but on the brain development of our students as well. As someone who lost a cousin as a teenager, my mother witnessed the shooting. Seeing my cousin in that way is etched in my memory, and it's a pain that doesn't go away. But I want to send a message out to those who have been impacted and who are in pain today that you are not alone and that there is help that is available. And thank you, Representative Mueller, for lifting up some of the resources that are available for students and for adults as well. We'll move into testimony, and we will start with Superintendent Lewandowski. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sandy Lewandowski, and I'm the Superintendent of Intermediate District 287. My intermediate is one of 4 intermediate districts, and we're located on the west side of the metropolitan area, roughly the suburban ring from Osseo area schools on the north to Richfield Public Schools on the south. As an intermediate, we provide an array of programs and services, including online instruction, career and technical education, care and treatment programming, and setting 4 students in special education. These students in setting 4 programs are students whose IEPs indicate they need a segregated program for the entire school day. We have 4 major schools geographically arranged in the West Metro, and our student population is roughly 60% BIPOC and 40% white. Sadly, we are also the school district that is the first metro school district to experience a school shooting that resulted in the death of a student and the serious injury to a second student. It's crushed our school community. And in my opinion, it was preventable. And here's why I say that. Our most vulnerable students are not okay. They are not getting the mental health treatment they need. They don't have access to wraparound community schools that are critical to their survival and their potential to thrive. As you've heard from earlier testifiers, our staff are not okay, and they are deeply suffering. We also know that racism and all its inequities are present throughout the lives of our BIPOC students. We've been able to see the racialized trauma and its presence in the lives of our students, and yet we have hope for trauma-responsive and healing-centered educational approaches. We ask you to understand the racial trauma and the inequities our students experience and how those inequities led them through our doors. One piece of data tells us part of the story. Prior to COVID, we pulled data from the files of our students who are in care and treatment programs in our geographical area. We provide the educational services to those care and treatment programs. The programs include those both meant for mental health treatments and correction centers. We found that our Black students were 6 times more likely to be directed to corrections rather than for mental health treatment. I would like to briefly turn it to my colleague, Radius Guess, our Director of Equity and Inclusion, to talk about that part of the trauma that leads kids through our doors. And then I'll provide the rest of the testimony, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Superintendent Lewandowski. Radius Guess, if you would introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, Madam Chair Richardson and members of the committee, I am Radius Guess, and I am the Director of Equity and Inclusion in Intermediate District 287. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you on today. I am here to express my concerns and advocate for changing the narrative related to understanding and healing racism and racialized trauma to empower students and transform our school communities. Racial trauma, also known as race-based traumatic stress, refers to the stressful impact or emotional pain of one's experience with racism and discrimination. Frederick Douglass once said, "It's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men." When I think about this quote, it often leads me to reflect on the trauma that our Black and Brown boys face growing up in United States schools. To help nurture strong Black and Brown boys, we need to address the trauma that many of them face inside and outside the school. You and I know trauma undermines a student's inherent curiosity and desire to learn. We also know that it influences behavior, motivation, and sense of purpose. While adults chide students who don't demonstrate a deep desire to learn, according to their standards, many Black and Brown boys are in perpetual flight, fight, or freeze modes in response to their traumatic experience. For instance, scientists have found that children who have been subjected to repeated trauma, sexual assault, physical assault, witnessing the shooting or stabbing of a person, sudden death of a parent or trusted caregiver, they suffer from other social, psychological, cognitive, and biological issues, including difficulty regulating their emotions, paying attention, and forming good relationships, all of which make it very difficult for a child to succeed in school. I can't breathe. We can't keep doing the same thing, expecting different results. It is the moral and ethical responsibility and a top priority in Intermediate District 287 to ensure that all district operations and initiatives align with strategic priorities. Racial equity, evidence-based instruction, employee well-being, and trauma-responsive and healing-centered practices are the strategic priorities in District 287. We need your help finding resources and programs that will help Minnesota's intermediate districts and staff learn the rationale and importance of implementing trauma-informed best practices to support our youth. Joshua Dickerson, his poem really does a great job of capturing the racialized trauma in many of our students. I woke myself up. We ain't got an alarm clock. Dug in the dirty clothes basket because nobody washed my uniform. Brushed my hair and teeth in the dark. The lights ain't on. Even got my baby sister ready because my mama wasn't home. Got us both to school on time to eat a good breakfast. Then when I got to class, the teacher fussed because I ain't got no pencil. In a society that is known for demonstrating that children are not a priority, the contempt shown for Black and brown boys is even more alarming. We need elected officials, decision makers, and educators who will fight on Black and boys' behalf, commit to learning more about Black and boys individually and the collective oppression they face, as well as our own biases that we wield and further traumatize students. Because no matter what Black and brown boys face on the outside, we know with a high level of certainty that classrooms and schools are also barriers to brown and Black boys' joy as well. Racism impacts not just hurt feelings, but in a physiological response. That means how your body takes in the information. So you might see a video or even hear a story about Jamari's death or about any other person that looks like you being murdered. You may notice a drop in your stomach. You may notice your heart rate picks up. You may notice that you start sweating. You may notice that your eyes start to tear up. You may have a hard time breathing. It is imperative that we address the impact of mental health and racial trauma on our children's education. We need to re-examine our priorities to include providing educators with resources to address racial equity and understand and respond to the historical and racialized trauma that has impacted our children. Our students continue to be faced with onslaughts of highly publicized instances of murders and violence against bodies of culture. Those somatic responses in the body have long-term health consequences. And for bodies of culture students, very often this is invalidated. People think you should just get over it. And when you're experiencing that kind of pain, you don't receive an empathetic response, a response where someone says, I feel you, I see you, I get you, I hear you. It goes deeper. We need resources and programs that will enable us to talk honestly and directly about the historical and racialized impacts of racism in the United States and the necessity for all of us to recognize this trauma, metabolize it, work through it, and grow up out of it. I thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony, Superintendent Lewandowski.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as I sit in front of audiences the past couple weeks, the question I sense from them is, could you have seen this coming? Today, I direct my answer to this committee and other committees that are responsible for the education and well-being of our youth. I referenced the numerous testimonies given to various education and health and human service committees. I referenced my letters to two governors and three commissioners, the op-ed pieces that I've tried to shout the message clearly that the kids are not okay. We are in a code red situation in regard to safety and well-being of our students. By way of example, I want to cite a previous testimony from March of 2019. Nearly all of the students in my district have severe and persistent mental health conditions, are identified as having multiple medical diagnoses and numerous behavioral disorders. Most have experienced complex developmental and racial trauma, and in their short lives, they've suffered great pain and deserve our compassion and the best therapeutic treatment possible. Yet often they are in the classes of special education programs and area learning center programs in our intermediate district without access to that treatment. School-like districts like mine have become the front line of children's mental health system, and I testify here today that public schools cannot sustain this effort. We were never designed to provide the equivalent of residential treatment services. Lack of clear policy and sustained funding have put my staff and my students at great risk. And I sincerely hope that I can ensure their safety as we go forward. The schools in my district have students in acute mental health crises every single day. Madam Chair and members of the committee, it's often hard to comprehend what these needs look like to those not familiar with intermediate districts. I want to very briefly describe our reality. I have students who assault our staff every single day and kids who are assaulted regularly in their homes and communities. I have students who've been sexually abused and kids who are the perpetrators of those sexual assaults. I have students who threaten to commit suicide during the school day and those who threaten to kill my staff. Some of these students have access to weapons. I have students who hear voices and those who have psychotic breaks and those who have no conscience. I have kindergarten students whose behavior is so aggressive and disruptive they're placed in my school at 5 years old after treatment centers have turned them away because of their aggression toward others. I have adolescents who are homeless and mentally ill and whose only safe place to land is our school doors. They threaten and curse our staff, and yet they count on our school as the only safe place they have. I have students who've committed murder and students who have been trafficked. I have students who threaten to blow up schools, and I lay awake at night wondering when this might actually happen. I have students who've been in jail for rape and for murder. I have students who've knocked staff members unconscious and students who have sexually assaulted a female teacher in their classroom. I have staff with broken noses, broken jaws, and ruptured spleens. The students who caused these injuries have remained in our school without treatment because of their considerable protections. I regularly transport students to hospitals via 911 because they're having an acute mental health crisis. They're rarely admitted to hospitals and often are back in my school the next day. Somehow, we cannot convince a parent or an EMT or even police that they need to be transported. Following several high-profile school shootings, we often hear the lament that surely somebody could have seen this tragedy coming. I suggest to you this is our collective opportunity to see a potential tragedy in the future and do something to prevent it. That was in 2019. One of our staff members wrote the following about Jamari. And we have lots of Jamaris in our community. one of my colleagues said, our Jamaris are black and brown, and some are white. Jamari was a beautiful soul. He had family who loved him, and we are blessed that we had him and his family for 2 days. He was a child among us. In the USA Today newspaper on February 11th, they wrote about Jamari's death. He loved sports, he wrestled, he played basketball, but football was his passion. And they also mentioned in the newspaper that 4 years after the deadliest high school shooting in U.S. history, the numbers of shootings on school grounds is reaching troubling new peaks, according to data from two groups that track the shooting. There were at least 136 instances of gunfire on school grounds between August 1st and December 31st of the past year. That figure is nearly four times the average for the period from this data source since they began tracking gunfire on school grounds in 2013. This has by far been the most violent first half of the school year in recent history. It is with that data and my own experience that I tell this committee that my district is the canary in the coal mine. Unless the state is ready to address gun violence, racism, and racial inequities that are present in our state, we can't expect more school violence. And I plead with you as leaders in this legislature to help us move forward the reform that's needed to raise our children in a safe and thriving environment. Thank you.
Thank you both for your testimony. There are a couple of member hands that are up. Representative Keeler, we'll start with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for bringing this conversation to the table. I feel like we all can feel the emotion, and I think because it's real for a lot of us. As those of us who sit on this committee, a lot of us have talked about our time and our experience as teachers, as liaisons, as support staff. We hear it in our students, we hear it in our faculty and our staff and our leaders. And I think I just want to take the time to remind us as politicians that we're here to care about people. And I know politics divides us. People, I think, can unite us. And when our people are coming to us in shambles and in this much pain, it's our responsibility to listen. I heard Representative Erickson mention clergy in churches or in schools, and I'm not going to criticize that. What I actually want to say is that as the Indigenous culture, we believe that we're not in our whole perfect self unless we understand the entire medicine wheel. And that's our mind, our body, our soul, and our spirit. Unless we take care of all of those pieces collectively for our next generation, we are going to continue to create pain over and over and over. So my only ask is that we meet this request, hearing the pain that is coming from all of our communities. This is not just one school district. All of us have had this. I lost students myself in the last couple of years, and it's horrifying. And we get an email that says, hey, staff, if you're dealing with this and you're having a hard time, we have people here on site to help you, yet you don't have somebody to cover your classrooms. You can't stop your day to go take care of yourself. We are destroying our education system by not caring and listening to the people who are laying their hearts on the ground every single day for our kids. I am the aunt of a niece who her birthday is today, who actually lost her life because she turned to other resources to try to help her mental health because school didn't have the resources available. And so I really appreciate us taking the time to have this conversation and almost being able to be real and raw as politicians. I think we find ourselves talking a lot about budget and money, and that all is really important. But at the end of the day, our kids matter. Their lives matter, and I just hope that at some point we can set all of this aside and do what is right for our next generations. Thank you, Chair Richardson, for allowing us to have this conversation. I think we all agree that our next generations deserve this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also want to thank you, Madam Chair, for having this, letting us listen to these stories today. I think it's really powerful and impactful and necessary. I'm wondering if our testifiers could maybe talk a little bit about, you know, we heard all of the what your students are going through. If you could maybe talk about sort of gaps that have been identified. So we know that kids don't just, they're not just born, right, with all this trauma. They're not just born being, you know, being, having these behavior problems, having these mental health problems. If you can talk a little bit about what you've heard from students and families of where the gaps are and what we can do to try and fill those gaps. I think start earlier is one of the answers, but if we can't start earlier, what else can we do? So I don't know if you could just touch briefly on where you see the gaps in the lives of your students and your families that we could maybe help as a legislature. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wasilek. Which of you would like to address that?
Madam Chair, I'll take the question. Committee members, absolutely, it starts early with our babies and our toddlers and our families, and providing them the kind of services, the kind of time, and the kind of income they need to have a stable start in life. I think the other thing that comes to mind, specific to my intermediate, which we desperately need for kids with some of the highest needs, is we definitely need permanent funding for innovative, culturally representative mental health partnerships. We happen to have one with the Wilder Foundation for some of our youngest children, and we need to expand that kind of intensive mental health therapy, because frankly, our kindergarten, our first grade, our third grade kids can't get into any mental health programs right now, even if they were available, because the barriers are too high for our parents and our families to climb over. We need permanent funding for full service community schools. The time has passed when we should be beginning that work. We need specifically centered partnerships that address local community school kinds of issues. If I had full service community schools in my four major schools, we would be different in how we operate. We would be more seamless with the services those students and families need. We wouldn't have to have them wait to search out numerous different pathways to try to get what they need. We desperately need more time for our staff, both our licensed staff and our paraprofessional staff, who are incredible in what they do. But we have a handful of professional development days that are supposed to be devoted to literacy and math and social studies. We have the need for staff to know about trauma-responsive strategies. We have the need for our staff to have time to prepare for their students and our students' needs. We have to have time. Time is capital in our work right now. Our staff is totally tired, and they're not able to do and learn everything they need to learn about the students and families who are coming through our doors. Finally, legislators, I say this with all respect, but we need our legislative leaders to model problem solving, collaboration, and how to get solutions for our kids. If we can't do that as leaders, and I count myself among them, if we can't do that for our students, I think all other issues will fail as well. We need to model what we believe we want to see in our students, how to get along with each other.
Thank you, Superintendent. Representative Wasilek.
That was a long, important list, and I appreciate that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Wasilek. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. And just wanted to comment, you know, certainly school violence perpetrated upon students and faculty and staff is a major issue, and I appreciate this discussion and the concerns being shown. I do remind you that I do have a bill that deals with school staff particularly, but also in trying to look at the root causes of incidents in our schools. And I think I'm certainly open to changes, flexibility in it, but we need to look at legislation that deals with this. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl, for your comments as well. And I think you know that I also have a bill to deal with the disparities that we're seeing in school discipline as well, particularly in incidences that don't involve violence. But I am happy to continue that conversation with you as well. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to ask Ms. Lewandowski to talk about the positives that Intermediate 287 has accomplished, because I've been around a lot of years and heard you testify many, many times, but I also know that you have successes. And could you just share with us some of the successes you've had at 287 so that we could close off this committee hearing knowing that 287 does do some really great work?
Representative Erickson and members of the committee, thank you very much. You and I go back a long way. I appreciate the prompt. And we do have successes. Right now, we have little ones in our therapeutic treatment program with the Wilder Foundation that are making gains, that are overcoming some deep traumas that they've experienced in their short life. We have students in our Setting 4 special education program, numerous students who are ready to transfer back to their own home districts and participate in their own local schools because they've received the kind of intensive instruction and care that they needed for a period of time until they could heal and move back. We have two young women who were coming to testify in front of Chair Dabney's committee the day of the shooting. They were talking about what our school district gave them and how that was needed, and also what they needed to continue to thrive. They're both on the track to graduate. I want to tell you about some of the students in our ALC programs. Typically, they come because they've not been able to succeed in other programs. We now have a number of students who not only got their diploma, but are educational assistants in our programs and on their way to getting a license as a teacher. These are the kinds of things, the wonderments that have kept many of us in our careers over time. And there are many more, and I am respectful of the time of this committee, but I'm greatly appreciative of Representative Erickson for asking that question.
Thank you, Superintendent. Representative Erickson.
Yes, Madam Chair. I thought it was important that we close with that because, a place like Intermediate 287 has really helped so many children to get back on track, and we can't discount the good things that they do in spite of, the stories that we've heard today that are very sad and for which we need to try to find some solutions. But I also have great respect for 287 and our other intermediates and knew that we should hear that positive before we close off today. So thank you.
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank the testifiers from District 287 for their testimony. Many in our communities are struggling, whether it's school shooting, whether it's police shooting, whether it's constant crisis in parts of our community. We have had really rough years, and I really have so much respect for you guys and the work that you're doing with students, dealing with you know, students who are coming from homelessness, students who are coming from sexual assault, physical assault, you name it, who have many issues going on for them. You work with them, you see them every day, you hold their hand and you tell them that it's going to be okay and hope for tomorrow to be a better day. That's a noble work, and I thank you for that. But I also want to, you know, highlight that there has been a lot of school-related incidents of discrimination towards Black students. You know, there is currently at least two that are currently going on. One that happened, an incident that happened in Minnetonka over the weekend, one that just happened today. And I really want, you know, people to check in with Yang people and students, because our students are not okay. If you're constantly being bullied and being, you know, called names, and you're not being respected, and people are picking on you because of your skin color or because of your heritage or because of something, because of your disability, you're not learning anything, and you are in that survival mode of like, I just want to be done with today. Suicide is up, opioid use is up with students, mental health crisis is skyrocketing. So I hope, you know, MDE is on the call with us and they're listening, and we come up with a way to support our students and ways to deal with racial bullying that is really becoming a real problem in our schools. Racial bullying is becoming a real problematic, and hopefully all the educators and administrators out there who are listening to this, that they take racial bullying seriously. Because if our students are not feeling safe in their own skin, they're not learning, they're not doing anything, their life is not progressing. I thank you, Chair Richardson, for this. This is a much needed conversation as we, you know, see our students in pain. This was a much needed and the right timing for this conversation. Thank you for your leadership.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan, for your words and comments as well. And I will just reiterate, as we're coming up on time here, this is not the beginning of this conversation, as it has been so eloquently laid out, and it's not the end. And we will continue to have ongoing conversations to ensure that we are working to support not only our students, but to support all school staff. And to the testifiers today, just some really important points that I want to lift up. The need for wraparound service delivery, the need for full service community schools, the reality that having this conversation right now is a long overdue conversation. And we can look around and we can see the many positive contributions that come from having those community-based responses with full-service community schools and the supports that that bring. And I really want to take this moment to also lift up the testifiers in highlighting the impact of racial trauma and the impact that racial trauma has not only on a student's ability to learn, but the impact that it has on their physical and mental health as well. We passed a bipartisan House resolution in 2020 declaring racism a public health crisis. And with that, we were able to agree that racism exists, systemic racism exists, and that it is harmful. And it is incumbent on us to dismantle those systems that continue to have impacts. And we will never be as prosperous of a Minnesota as we can be as long as we continue to allow systemic racism to exist. And with that, We are at time, but I will remind members that Monday we will be meeting February 21st, and we will be hearing two anti-bullying bills from Representatives Berg and Representative Hansen as well. Again, thank you to our guests today. We appreciate the work that you have all done, and I know that we will remain in communication. And know that we are continuing to send prayers, thoughts, love your way, but you need more than that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for your time here today. I look forward and commit myself and our district to the ongoing work in this critically important area. Thank you.
There being no further business before the committee, we are adjourned.